Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Answers podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Chappell. I am a reproductive endocrinologist and infertility physician at Fertility Answers here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I'm privileged and happy to bring to you another conversation to kind of add to our curation of common conversations that we have. We've always tried to bring topics that we get a lot of questions about, and I'd like to, you know, either have conversations with patients or basically just take a whole bunch of information from the research that's been done all around the world and distill it down into 10 to 15 minutes of the stuff that you need to know. Today, I want to bring an extremely common topic that I see, frankly, mishandled or misunderstood quite often, and that's progesterone, especially as it relates to recurrent miscarriage. And frankly, to understand this, you really need to understand a little bit about the basics of miscarriage, and that really helps you to inform why this is something that's misunderstood or mistreated so often. The most important thing is that the general miscarriage rate at baseline, at best, is 15%, and that's even high. It's even higher for some certain subpopulations. What I mean by that is, at least 1 in 8 pregnancies is going to end in miscarriage simply because the egg and the sperm did not combine appropriately. And that's not anything that anybody did wrong or didn't do. And that has nothing to do with like inherent true pathology in a particular patient or a partner. It's just simply Mother Nature. The way the system, the way reproduction works, the egg and the sperm don't always align appropriately. The genetics aren't always correct. And so anywhere from 15 to 50% of the time, a miscarriage occurs. And we kind of tend to call those natural miscarriages because they're not anything that's pathologic about. There's nothing we can do about those. They just kind of occur in nature. So that is something we have to understand is that at baseline, some of these things just kind of happen. The other thing to keep in mind with miscarriage is that there are several reasons beyond just egg and sperm not shaking hands correctly, and not all reasons for miscarriages are related to the same. So if someone has a miscarriage because of a uterine anomaly or a hormone issue or whatever, they can also have a natural miscarriage inside their history. Just because you have one issue going on doesn't mean that you don't also have a baseline risk for other things just happening. I think a lot of people will make the mistaken assumption that, oh, I found this one problem, I addressed this one problem, I will never have another miscarriage again. Their baseline rate still exists, and there are other reasons for miscarriage. And you don't just have one thing going on at all times. You have to think about all of the etiologies. With this being the case, it is true that many miscarriages may not be true pathology. They may just be unfortunate luck in the egg and sperm not shaking hands. And so the next pregnancy, even in someone that's had a couple of quote unquote natural miscarriages, is very likely to be a success. For example, just to kind of put things in context, in someone that's had a prior pregnancy, if you've had 2 or 3 or even 4 miscarriages, you are still more likely to have a perfectly healthy, happy, normal live birth with the next pregnancy, even after 2 or 3 or 4 miscarriages. This can create what we call success bias, because natural miscarriages are so darn common that they occur in many folks, and therefore there's not really true pathology in their history, but someone will give them a vitamin or a supplement or progesterone or something, even if they really didn't need it, and they'll have a healthy, happy live birth, and they'll attribute that healthy, happy live birth to whatever intervention was recommended to them, even if it had nothing to do with the success in their pregnancy, if that makes sense. And so we have to kind of understand the natural history of eggs and sperm shaking hands to make embryos, keeping in mind implantation, keeping in mind that there could be more than one reason for each of the individual miscarriages in someone's history, and keeping in mind that for a lot of patients, it kind of doesn't matter what we do. We may not need to do anything, and they can still go on to have a healthy, happy family. The other thing, so that's kind of etiology or the environment of miscarriage that just needs to be understood. The other thing that needs to be understood to understand progesterone and its role in miscarriage is progesterone itself. And what's the biochemistry of progesterone? Well, first of all, it's pulsatile. Okay, what do I mean by that? Remember, what creates progesterone is what's called the corpus luteum, the site of ovulation. After the egg has grown up and ovulated, the spot where it was ovulated becomes the corpus luteum. And this is a special small center in the ovary whose job is to make the progesterone that supports the implantation of hopefully that embryo that's created in that menstrual cycle. Progesterone's trigger to be produced comes from the hormone LH. And if you remember any of my prior talks, LH is a hormone from the brain that goes down to the ovary to tell the ovary what to do. In this case, in this particular window of the menstrual cycle, LH is saying, make progesterone. The funny thing about LH is it doesn't sit around in the blood for very long, just less than an hour, typically. And so that means that the signal for making progesterone comes in hard, comes in fast, and then goes away. And so progesterone production gets spiked and then goes down and then gets spiked and then goes down and then gets spiked and then goes down. That's just how it gets signaled to be produced. That's how it gets produced. And so at any one time, you can have a several fold difference in the variation of your progesterone level. You can check it at 8 a.m. one morning and it be 20 or 25. And you check it again at 3 in the afternoon and it be 6. And if you're not aware that it's normal to have pretty wild variations in progesterone production, you may check it at a random time and find it to be falsely alarming, seeing it's low when actually your overall production of progesterone is fantastic. Or you may find it to be falsely reassuring and you might find a window where it's really, really high, but in actuality, the overall production of progesterone is low. So just doing a random spot check of progesterone is one of the least helpful things you can do. That's a really important thing to remember. Progesterone, a random spot check of progesterone is useful to say that you have ovulated. If it's above 3, you ovulated. But did you ovulate well? You can't say with one random spot check of progesterone. And then finally, besides just not doing a spot check to give you an idea of your true luteal function, as they say, but a lot of what drives good progesterone production is good follicular production. And what I mean by that is, remember, the corpus luteum is made by the site of ovulation. So if you didn't grow a good egg in the first place, you're not going to really be setting yourself up for success from the standpoint of that corpus luteum. So some folks say, oh, I don't have a really good luteal phase. Well, you may not have a good luteal phase because you don't have a good follicular phase. If you're not growing a good egg to be ovulated, you're not really giving yourself a good foundation to make good progesterone. And so sometimes fixing the luteal phase by giving progesterone is not the answer. Rather, the answer is better ovulation and set yourself up for a good factory to make that progesterone. Okay. So again, natural miscarriages, super duper common, unfortunately. So don't confuse intervention with absolute success. Just because we do something does not mean it helped. It could be that someone's just had a natural miscarriage or two and they actually don't need help. And it's a really important job for a provider to understand when their interventions are actually carrying weight or when they're just adding cost or risk to a patient's journey. And understand that because natural miscarriages are unfortunately common, you may have a natural miscarriage in the setting of someone who also has true pathology. And so being able to discern the two is important, an important part of the conversation. Take progesterone measurements with a large grain of salt. Anyway, let's move on with that foundation. I think a little quick history lesson is important. How did we get to the understanding of progesterone that we have now? Well, it has to do with the way we discovered steroid hormones. So without going too far down a very interesting rabbit hole that is the history of steroid hormones, let's talk a little bit about progesterone. We found out how to measure steroid hormones like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. All the sex hormones are steroid hormones. We found out how to measure them, so we started measuring them. And we found out that progesterone goes up in pregnancy. And we found out that in pregnancies that were failing and leading to miscarriages had low progesterone. And so we appropriately assumed that low progesterone was the cause of miscarriages. But in fact, as I kind of already alluded to earlier in this conversation, sometimes low progesterone is the sign of a bad pregnancy. The early signal for production of progesterone prior to pregnancy is LH. But once you have pregnancy, the signal for progesterone production comes from the pregnancy itself. So pregnancy makes a pregnancy hormone called HCG. Once that embryo starts to implant, that embryo makes a whole bunch of HCG to tell the corpus luteum, continue to make progesterone, give me all the support I need. A pregnancy that's abnormal, either ectopic, like not in the uterus, or genetically abnormal, where the egg and the sperm combined okay, but not fantastic and not perfect. So it started a pregnancy, but a pregnancy that will ultimately not continue because it doesn't have the right genetic material, or is not going to be as good at making HCG as a normal pregnancy. And so these pregnancies will have lower progesterone production, not because you can't make progesterone, but because the pregnancy is not signaling appropriately because it itself is abnormal. So we made the false assumption that all low progesterone equals miscarriage because it's low progesterone, but really sometimes miscarriages make low progesterone. And so being able to think about both sides of that street is important in how we interpret progesterone as well. Okay, that is a ton of background, but it's really, really important because a lot of people will tell you, here, you know, you need to be on progesterone for this pregnancy, and that may or may not be true. And I see a lot of people starting progesterone at the wrong times or giving it in the wrong route or telling people that they need to be on certain variations of it, and none of this is evidence-based. So let's get to what the research, the studies actually say about progesterone in pregnancy now that we kind of have a little better foundational understanding of progesterone and its role in early pregnancy. Okay, again, the studies, even the studies are a little confusing. There are different definitions of recurrent miscarriage. Some folks say two or more, some papers say three or more. Some define whether or not you need a heartbeat or not, or versus just a positive pregnancy test. And there are different ways to make progesterone. There are different types of progesterone. There are different routes of progesterone. Several different pharmaceuticals have different variations of the progesterone molecule, so it's better absorbed or more active on the certain on progesterone receptors. And you can take it by mouth. You can place it in the vagina. There are creams that you can rub on the thighs or the arms or the belly. And then, of course, you can do the shot in the muscle as well. But the two biggest trials, I think, they were probably done the best were the PROMISE and the PRISM trials. The PROMISE trial was done back in 2016. It was a multi-center randomized controlled trial. One day I'll probably do a podcast on the different levels of evidence and how what is a good trial, what's not a good trial. Randomized controlled trials are kind of considered the gold standard best way to do research. And so when you hear that someone's done a randomized controlled trial over several different locations, your ears should really perk up. That was probably that's a good foundation for a good study. This was 1,500 women with three or more losses, and they studied vaginal progesterone versus a placebo, meaning a pill that didn't have any medicine in it, starting at positive pregnancy test. They had ultimately, after screening 1,500 women, they found 836 that got pregnant and participated in the trial. So 400 basically women that got the drug and 400 women that did not get the drug, and found no differences in live birth and no differences in miscarriage either. Importantly, about a third of the women had a fourth or more, you know, an additional miscarriage in that pregnancy at roughly around 7 to 8 weeks. So this just further highlights the chance for live birth, even if you do nothing. And so the patients that got nothing, the patients that got the placebo, the 400 that got the placebo, still 2/3 of them had a baby. And in that trial, they had nothing done to them differently. And if you got the progesterone, still 2/3 had a baby. And the other third in each of the arms wound up miscarrying despite getting the progesterone or not getting anything at all. So it's really difficult to say that progesterone had any benefit in the study. And in fact, that was the author's conclusion. My major flaw that I want to point out in this study is that progesterone wasn't given until after the positive pregnancy test. And in some patients, they were already 4, 5, or 6 weeks along. So I want you to keep that in mind as we continue to talk about the distillation of this data. The next trial came out in 2019, and this was another multi-center trial in the UK. This was the PRISM trial. And this was looking at progesterone as well. And specifically, this was looking at progesterone in patients in the first trimester that start bleeding. So this is well after positive pregnancy test, and this is just looking at all patients that have early bleeding, because there was always this consensus concern that early bleeding might be an indication of miscarriage, and perhaps you could salvage those pregnancies by adding a little extra progesterone on. So they looked at 4,000 women, 2,000 in each arm, again, giving vaginal progesterone in if you had first trimester bleed, or giving a placebo with no hormone at all. Again, here, live birth rates were 75% in both arms, with a miscarriage rate of approximately 20%, meaning that regardless of whether or not you got the vaginal progesterone or not, you had the same outcomes. So now that being said, the live birth rate was about 3% higher in the progesterone arm, but they were both near 75%. In studies that are this big, one of the other benefits you can do is what's called a secondary analysis, where you can say, okay, look, we looked at all these folks, and in all these folks, we really didn't see a very strong correlation. But let's go look at maybe the highest risk folks in each arm. And if you took patients that had three or more miscarriages inside this group of the PRISM trial, actually you did start to see a much stronger evidence of progesterone help in those patients. And so now we're kind of getting a little closer to the truth that progesterone can be helpful in some patients that truly do have some form of a luteal defect. The vast majority of patients that have a history of a few miscarriages probably don't have a major problem with progesterone production, certainly not near as high as we once thought. But there are patients that it's worth considering adding progesterone. And so the other thing you need to think about is when to add progesterone. And one of the biggest trials came out of Egypt that showed if actually you add progesterone prior to the positive pregnancy test in the luteal phase around the time of implantation, that's probably where you see the most benefit. So without further ado, I'm going to give you the sticking points for how we should probably be thinking about progesterone production, because I know that I'm just kind of talking a whole lot of information now. So does adding progesterone in early pregnancy help reduce the risk of miscarriage? Probably yes, but how you add it and when you add it likely matter. You're probably most beneficial, most efficacious if you add it early on, as early as possible, probably around implantation before you can even have a positive pregnancy test. At least that's what the Egypt trial showed. Gabriel Ciccone did a really good, what's called meta-analysis, where she looked at 10 different studies, over 1,500 women. Yeah, interestingly, what she showed is the vaginal or the intramuscular much more helpful than just giving a progesterone pill. And actually what she showed too was that the synthetic progesterones were more helpful than the natural. So there's a lot of folks out there that say natural hormones are better than synthetic hormones. There is zero evidence, zero basis to any of those claims. There has never been a study that has shown that one particular hormone is better than another particular hormone when it comes to absorption or efficacy in early pregnancy. That just does not exist. And anyone that's telling you that their compounded form of progesterone is better than any of the cheaper pharmaceutical grade forms of progesterone is not telling you the truth. And if anybody has any evidence to the contrary, I'm more than happy to review those studies. You can email me at podcast@fertilityanswers.com. But Gabriel Ciccone's meta-analysis showed that actually the synthetics were better than the natural in lowering miscarriage rates and in being more effective as far as that goes. So I think that the key is early progesterone is better, and vaginal or intramuscular is better than oral, and synthetic is better than natural. And timing-wise, as soon as possible. And all of that to say that it probably doesn't matter in most, but adding on progesterone in early pregnancy for a high risk patient, there is minimal risk in adding progesterone on, with few exceptions. So most of my patients, when they ask about it, what I counsel them is minimal risk, potential benefit. But for most patients, the benefit is small. The more important question isn't, should I be taking progesterone? The more important question is, how do we optimize ovulation and optimize your environment for early pregnancy so that you're in a position to make your to have the best site of ovulation, best corpus luteum, and best early pregnancy environment to support your own implantation. And so looking into the other factors that may increase your risk for miscarriage, looking into your metabolism, looking into your other hormone production, looking into the uterine environment, understanding your immune system, all those things. Progesterone is probably one of the last things that I think about because it's usually not the problem. It is a low risk, potentially beneficial thing to add on if done in a thoughtful and purposeful manner. But doing so while ignoring the sperm and the uterus and the implantation environment and the other hormones and metabolism is silly because you need to be able to take into account all those other things. So I hope that shines a little bit of light on how you should be thinking about progesterone. Again, please feel free to email us at podcast@fertilityanswers.com with any other questions, comments, thoughts, concerns. I welcome any other literature or anything else that you may have that doesn't support what I'm saying, but this is my understanding of the literature that I've poured over the years. And so I think this is evidence-based and up-to-date, and I do think feel very strongly about appropriately counseling patients on this very confusing topic. Thank you all for your attention, and look forward to bringing you another episode soon. Thanks.